let's get right at it. Juan He, okay. I've asked Juan He to navigate this paper carefully and take us through question by question so that you can keep track of which question is talking about which consensus.
Okay, the first agenda is agenda paper 2. This paper proposes the wording for 8 separate agenda decisions on various issues that the Interpretations Committee discussed from November 2013 to September 2014. We have first highlighted some key points for finalizing the wording, which are shown from pages 3 to 6 of this paper. I think that we may as well go through each agenda decision one by one, addressing key points relevant to each agenda decision. First, there are 3 key points relating to agenda decision A. The first point is about deleting the terms direct and in substance when describing rights and obligations with respect to the assessment of other facts and circumstances. The second point is that we exclude the discussion involving the term piercing the veil of incorporation. And the third point is about whether and where we should locate the section of implication of economic substance. On this point, we have 3 alternatives. Alternative A is to keep this section in agenda decision A. Alternative B is to delete the section, and alternative C is to locate this section to agenda decision D, which deals with the case of 2 joint arrangements with similar features that are classified differently. So do you have comments on these points, and do you agree with the current wording for agenda decision A?
Agenda decision A. Comments? John?
I agree with the first 2 questions, but I don't think the discussion of economic substance is necessary. I think it's, I would delete it.
Tony?
I agree with John. I'm comfortable with removing the references to direct and in substance and with removing the reference to the veil of incorporation, but I would also delete the reference to economic substance. I'm not sure it adds anything. There are also a couple of less significant drafting points that I might just give to Juan He. For example, there's a bit that says if the parties to the joint venture meet the criteria, or the parties to the joint arrangement, and I don't think parties to the joint arrangement can meet the criteria, the joint arrangement might. So I've just got a couple of thoughts on the drafting.
Good point. Reinhardt?
I also agree with the first 2 points. On the third point, implication of economic substance, I thought it was helpful to include as part of agenda decision A, because I think it helped focus on the fact that you look to enforceable rights as opposed to involvement with, or the nature of the involvement with, the arrangement itself. So although it doesn't add a whole lot, I did think it was helpful guidance.
Okay, let's just rotate here. Martin, Ronce, Andrew.
With regard to question number 3, I would vote for keeping it, because I guess it is a helpful guidance, specifically also for preparers to understand the standard.
Okay, Laurent.
I was supportive of keeping it. I do have a couple of drafting suggestions that I will forward to staff.
Andrew?
I'll wait in favor of deleting the economic substance discussion. I don't think it adds anything, and it's not quite clear what question it's actually answering. I also have a few other minor drafting points I'll send to Juan He independently.
Okay, Carl and last call. Carl and then Bonnie and then last.
Yes, for the 3 questions and the 3rd, keeping the subsession.
So I agreed also with the first and the second. I do think that piercing the
the veil of incorporation is relevant, but I'm okay to delete it because I think we all agree that it wasn't easily understandable. For the third, I also agree that it does help provide some additional information, which is helpful. So I would vote for keeping it.
Let me try the phones first, and then Marie will go to you. We have two people who are, I hope, on the phones. Fei Long? And Sandy? Maybe I hit the wrong button when the phone... we'll see if I've insulted them, if we can uninsult them. Marie?
Yeah, we think it's important to keep the implication of economic substance, because even if it doesn't add much, it will be more enforceable and more easy for us if we have it.
Okay. Include or exclude? Show of hands. Include? Count six. Exclude?
Six.
I count six or seven. Hands up for exclude. One, two, three, four, five, six. Let's keep it in. It's like chicken soup. It doesn't hurt.
If the key concern is the one that Reinhardt made about the degree of association is not relevant to the decision. It's about rights and obligations. That could be embedded in what we say earlier, rather than having a paragraph that talks about economic substance, when I think the reference to economic substance really doesn't add anything, because that's what you'd apply to all of the accounting. And if the key point is Reinhardt's point about the degree of association not mattering, then there could be one or two sentences in one of the previous sections to address that.
My only reservation is people raised it under the label of economic substance, and it came to us under that label. So if they're looking for what we said about their point, hanging it out here on its own assists with that.
And this is also going out for comment as well, so we'll hear what others say from that.
All right.
Okay.
One here, let's press on.
Next one is agenda decision B, and we have 2 points relating to this decision. Point four is whether we need to publish agenda decision B, because while drafting this paper, one committee member said that the specific fact pattern in this agenda decision were not documented in the prior brief updates. Point five relates to the issue which is under the title of determining the basis for substantially all of the output, which is located in the last part. One committee member suggested that the conclusion of this issue, which is that the assessment is based on the monetary value of the output rather than on fiscal quantities, may be interpretative. So the committee member suggested deleting the conclusion of this issue. So do you have any comment on these points, and do you agree with the current wording for agenda decision B?
Comments? Varance?
Output sold at market price. It says, second paragraph, it noted, for example, the cash flows provided to the joint arrangement through parties purchase of the output of the joint arrangement of the market price might not be sufficient in some circumstances. And there is nothing else behind. I think something is missing to explain that you need to have additional rights to compensate for the fact that there might not be sufficient cash in the joint arrangement, and so that there are other rights and obligations in order to reach joint operations. also, if here it talks about when you have, you might not have sufficient cash, what if you have an excess of cash? You have to demonstrate here how the parties have right to that excess of cash. So I was just thinking that it's a bit, something was missing.
Do you have a drafting suggestion?
Not yet.
Okay. Martin?
Well, I agree with point number four, whereas I'm not agreeing with point number five, that's deleting this subject, this section, because I believe it is necessary. And I do not believe that it is very interpretative. Consider by-production. You have, for example, one item which is of a very high monetary value, but it is only 3% of the output. And if I would just argue with physical quantities or so, it would be very misleading. So therefore, I believe that it is worthful to let it in, and that it is in the sense of count IFRS 11.
John?
The IFRS conferencing service. Please enter your...
Hang on a second.
...followed by hash. Please state your name and then press the hash key.
IFRS.
Those additional lights compensate enough music. Stay still.
You've done enough good for now.
The code you entered 7584803003 is not valid. Please try again. Press star 0 if state your name and then press the hash key.
IFRS. Still doing it. I think she's giving them the wrong numbers.
Yeah.
If you want to continue, then I'll get the wrong numbers.
John, then Reinhardt, or Martin, did you finish your point?
Yeah.
John, then Reinhardt, then Tony.
And I was going to say I agreed with Martin's point. I would publish the agenda decision, but I also think I don't agree with deleting the conclusion of the section determining the basis for substantial the output. I don't think it's interpreted, really. I mean, it seems to me that the basis for determining substantially all the output is the economic benefits that relate to the assets, which to me must be monetary value, not physical quantities. So I didn't find that interpretive, so I wouldn't support deletion of that conclusion.
Reinhardt?
I was going to say the same as John. I agree.
Tony?
Yeah, I support publishing the agenda decision. I guess I would be inclined to delete it because it reads like a rule. I think there's... you may well get to this answer in very many circumstances for the reason that that Martin described, but I just wonder if there might be other circumstances, and I guess I would have been inclined either to delete it or at least to soften it so that it looks a bit more like a principle than a rule.
Andrew?
Now, on point five, the basis for the output, I'd be inclined to leave the wording in, the conclusion in, at least for the tentative agenda decision. On point four, output sold at a market price, I agree with Laurence that just some minor drafting is needed to kind of close the circle on this. I do have a drafting suggestion which I can send in after the meeting.
Please do. All right. My sense of the comments is to keep it. Objections?
Sorry, I agree with Tony's view that it should be deleted. It reads a little bit more like a rule rather than the substance, which I think you get to that point, but I think it reads a little bit more interpretive than maybe what we had intended.
Okay. I see two objections. That's not enough. Three objections. Still not enough. Going once, going twice. Okay. We'll keep it. It's going out for exposure anyway, so. All right. Press on, Juanhe.
Next one is agenda decision C, and point six relates to this agenda decision, which is about project entities. The concern raised is that the wording is too specific, and it should be more based on general principles in the context of a party being a primary obligor. So we have included an alternative.
Juanhe, let's stop and one more try.
One more try.
Welcome to the IFRS conferencing service. Please enter your PIN number, followed by hash. You were the first person to join the meeting. Hold for the others. Please state your name and then press the hash key.
IFRS.
Michael, do you want to see emails? Maybe we can see emails tomorrow.
Okay. Morning.
Okay. To reflect the comment, we have included an alternative wording in Appendix A of this paper. So do you have many comments on this point, and do you agree with the current wording, or?
Name not recorded has joined the conference.
Welcome, name not recorded. We will call on you at the, as usual, when we're either immediately before or immediately after we circle the table.
Okay. So do you agree with the current wording or alternative wording or any comments on this section?
Okay, the current wording for those in radio land is on page 13 of the paper, and the alternative wording is on page what?
So in Appendix A, so 24 and 25.
Page 24.
Yes.
Of the paper. All right, comments? Philippe, board member privilege.
It's a question actually on the wording, page 13, the first bullet point, you have in parentheses, single before customer. I'm not quite sure how people would read that, because it seems to me, my recollection, if I'm correct, that the committee had to discuss two kinds of situations. One, which I think was a real estate industry case, which is the introduction to this paragraph, where it was not for a single customer, but it was a project entity selling goods, i.e. Real estate goods, to a multiplicity of customers. And the other case, if I recollect correctly, that was in the industry, kind of contracting industry, where the project entity was dealing with one only customer. Actually, two different fact patterns. And correct me if I'm wrong. Here, you talk about real estate industry, which to me was associated with several customers, as opposed to the construction industry, one customer only. So I'm not quite sure how people will read this between parentheses, single customer here. Yeah.
Reinhardt?
My personal preference would be not to publish either version of Agenda Paper C, because when I step back and look at it, the purpose for looking at the fact pattern was to determine whether we would change our view on any of the issues discussed in Agenda Paper A or B. And so I was trying to apply it to a set of facts and see if we would change the conclusion, which we didn't, or change our views, I should say, which we did not. And what I find potentially that may be problematic is the whole description of the performance guarantee. As we discussed at our meeting earlier, that is very confusing, and it seemed to suggest that the parties themselves had more than just a guarantee. It was so that they were primary obligors. And so I'm just concerned by putting either version of the agenda decision or publishing it, it'll just create confusion as to what is the obligation in instances where there's a guarantee, if that's sufficient to have an indirect obligation or direct obligation for the liabilities. So that would be my personal view.
Okay, let's just move down the line. I have Andrew, Tony, Laurence, Barton, Bruce.
Then my preference would be for the alternative wording, although I wouldn't actually object to publishing neither. If we publish either, I think we do need to do some work, particularly on the reference to primary obligors and not just as sureties. I'm not sure that's going to be a clearly understandable term, especially internationally. And even, I think, the interpretation of these phrases, even among lawyers, can be quite a bun fight. So exactly what that means in terms of rights to assets and obligations for liabilities, we'd better to just say what we think it means rather than use the phrase, in my view. My understanding is it actually means that the entity, the vehicle, doesn't need to default for the customers to have a claim. They can enforce specific performance irrespective of a claim. So if people agree with that, that would need to be, that would result in a wording change.
Have joined the conference.
In the draft agenda decision. And I also don't quite understand how having a primary obligation actually does create rights to the assets unless the parties have actually performed. And they might have an obligation to perform, but if the vehicle has performed, then the vehicle would have the rights to the assets, not the parties.
Just for the ignorant Americans, you said among lawyers it could be quite a
fun fight. A robust argument and debate. And
Tony?
I guess a couple of observations. I would be inclined to agree with Reinhardt that we shouldn't publish it at all. I think it's too specific a fact pattern, and I think it runs the risk of creating more uncertainty than it addresses. If we are going to go with it, then I would favour the alternative in the appendix, but I'd take it a step further, because I think listing the features of the joint arrangement adds to the uncertainty. As Philippe said, the features are not easy to understand, and I don't think it's limited to the first one. So my preference would be to not issue it at all. If we do issue it, I think it should be significantly truncated to simply address the situation in which the parties to the joint arrangement are primary obligors, and then explain the way that Andrew said, that this may give them an obligation for the liabilities, but it won't give them rights to assets. And then we could accomplish that in maybe two paragraphs.
Charlotte?
I think I agree with generally what's been said. I prefer the alternative approach because I think the other one's just confusing, but I still think there's confusion. And it's the paragraph which says, we observe that it's still a primary obligor regardless of the description in the guarantee. I think what we're trying to say is it really depends. If you are the primary obligor, this is the result. If you aren't, this is the result. But it doesn't seem to flow. And then there's no linkage between the liability conclusion and the asset conclusion. Well, the conclusion's all based on asset, but I'm not clear how that links into whether you're the primary obligor or not. And that would be the bit I think should be drawn out.
Laurence?
I have the same concerns as they have been expressed. We are confused. As for me, I wasn't sure what fact pattern we were trying to address here. If we were talking about the real estate example, I was not recognizing it anymore. So it didn't seem like to be a realistic fact pattern or real life fact pattern. So I think it is going to create more confusion. Plus the fact that usually the IFRIC does not respond to specific fact patterns. So now we might be taking another stance. I was uncomfortable with either drafting for the reasons that were mentioned about this distinction about whether a guarantee makes you primary obligor or not. And I'm afraid that this is going to create confusion. So I'm supportive of Reynard at this stage if we have to do something, unless significant redrafting. But
Martin?
I believe the alternative is better than the first draft. On the other hand, I guess it might be challenging to understand. As we will have it out for commenting anyhow, I guess that would be a chance to collect the feedback about the alternative.
Bruce?
My comments are pretty much those that have been shared. My preference on the two would definitely be the alternative. I think, as Laurent said, this is very industry specific, and I'd be very concerned that if we start doing a detailed agenda decision, which we're doing here, as we said, we haven't really tried to do this as a form of guidance, it's going to open the door for people to say, well, hang on, now we'll start getting agenda decisions in terms of industry specific. So my preference would definitely be on the alternative. I agree, it's a bit of wording to kind of clean that up, which we can obviously send through later. But I actually wouldn't disagree with those who've said that potentially just drop it. I guess maybe the challenge we've got is by taking something that is an industry specific issue and trying to make it general, we're kind of losing a bit of the substance of what we're trying to comment on.
John, and then we'll go to the phones.
I would publish it, but I have a preference for the alternative version in the appendix. I think there is an issue of the sort of if the parties are primary obligors, what impact does that have on the assessment of the joint operation or the classification of the joint arrangement? So I think I think the work that was done there and the discussion involving the project entity was actually useful in bringing out that issue. I also think in the current version, not the alternative, there's wording which says that it must have rights, both rights to the assets and obligations for the liabilities. It's not enough to just have one. I think that's actually also very useful. So I would actually put it out there, but I would go with the appendix and I would actually rework it to include some of the principles that seem to be in the current version.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Fei Long? Number C.
Number C. Okay. Let me. Number C.
Okay, we'll let you explore that one and come back to you here in a second. Sandy?
No, I got nothing to add right now. I'm just trying to catch up.
Okay.
I'm dialing.
Fei Long, do you want to just abstain on this one because you came in the middle?
Okay, yeah. I think, just for the alternative decision C, it seems to me that in the real life body of the observation, if we take this wording, some of the fact patterns which are specific and not provided enough detail to let readers to understand without looking back the previous detail staff analysis paper. So it's not enough, I think.
So you wouldn't, you think we would have to significantly expand it?
Yeah, if you take the current word, proposed wording.
Okay. Marie, last call.
Yeah, I think we support publishing something because we met situation where there were obligations related to the liabilities and not right to the assets, and that was the question which was not so clear, so we fully support having something. I mean, afterwards we need to see how, but I think it's important.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions, but the threshold question is whether we do anything at all with this one or whether we just drop it. This was brought to us by folks who thought that they had an important question about how the standard applied to their particular types of deals. So including it at least gives them a way to trace back to the question that they asked. The other concern, though, and I think Fei Long put it very clearly, either version is much less rich than all of the details that were in the submission that they made. So I'm not sure that, on the other hand, that they would recognize this baby as their own. So first question, those who would favor or not object, so that would be those who don't object, to just dropping it. Show of hands. Laurent had her hand up, yeah.
I think that's eight.
Eight, that's enough. Oh, on the phones. Who would favor, of the two on the phones, who would favor, who would not object to dropping? You would not object to dropping?
No.
You would rather retain?
Yeah.
Okay, Sandy?
I'm going to abstain. I'm still trying to catch up.
Okay, two abstentions there on the, or one abstention on the phone. So we had nine now?
That's nine.
No. Eight. I thought we had nine. Bruce put his,
oh, sorry.
Bruce put his hand up. That gives us nine.
Nine.
That's the basis for dropping.
That's right.
Okay. Then we will just not discuss this one. Philippe?
Yeah, I can understand that, but in a way, it's a bit of a pity that this very useful discussion is just lost. Is there anything the education people could do with that discussion, maybe by way of adding some educational materials? Michael, you may think about it. I'm not asking for a reply now, but I think it's a bit of a pity that
we
this kind of application situation of this concept is lost for the...
We could certainly bring it to their attention to see what might be possible, particularly some of the points that were brought out, and the point that John made in particular about the need to have both the rights to the assets and the obligations to the liability in order to get a joint operation, I think was quite an important one. So we can talk to them to see if there's a way of bringing that through in some of the materials that they produce.
Is there a way, and it may not fit with any of the other discrete topics, to just add a sentence and say, oh, by the way, we were also asked about how these principles apply to project entities, mm-hmm. and you can find that in such and such an agenda paper?
I'd be inclined not to do that, okay. Not to direct people to the agenda papers.
Yeah, probably not. All right. Bad idea. All right. Let's move on to the next one, Wani.
Okay. Next one is agenda decision D, and it is about two joint arrangements with similar features that are classified differently. But there is no relevant point to this agenda decision. the conclusion of this decision is that the economic substance means that the classification of the joint arrangement should reflect the rights and obligations of the parties to the joint arrangement, and the presence of a separate vehicle plays a significant role in determining the nature of those rights and obligations. So do you have any comments, and do you agree with the current wording for agenda decision D?
You might want to rephrase your presentation. There are relevant points to this agenda decision. There just aren't any issues that we needed specifically to discuss that were raised by the staff. So there are certainly very many relevant points in the agenda decision. Laurence?
For me, similar means similar in all material respects. When you have a joint arrangement that is structured through a legal entity versus one that is not structured through legal entity, they are not similar. Well, it's a difference. So I would think that the second paragraph that says the interpretation committee noted that IFRS 11 could lead to two joint arrangements with similar features being classified. Perhaps we can say similar features apart from the existence of a legal entity, or similar features, but not all, being classified differently if the principal difference.
With some similar features, or similar features except for, or
that would be
something.
One, I think.
Okay. Charlotte?
I had the same point. I think I put apparently similar features in because it didn't make sense. I'd also say the legal form of the separate vehicle may affect the rights because they don't always. So.
Okay. Fei Long, anything to add on this one?
No.
Sandy?
No.
Okay. Any objections? Okay, we'll publish it as that.
And next one is agenda decision E, and it has one relevant point. Point 7 is about how to describe the reason why paragraph 20D of IFRS 11 would not be applicable. Paragraph 20D describes that a joint operator should recognize its share of the revenue from the sale of the output by the joint operation. We said in this decision that paragraph 20D is not applicable if the assessment of other facts and circumstances results in the joint arrangement being classified as a joint operation, because the parties to the joint arrangement take all the output of the joint arrangement. And we based our conclusion on the fact that the sale of the output by the joint operation to the joint operator would mean selling output to itself, and therefore the joint operator would not recognize the shares of the revenue from the sale of the output by the joint operation. However, one committee member thought that the reason is because the share of the revenue from the sale of the output to the joint operator would be eliminated against the share of the output purchased by the joint operator. We didn't follow this reason because we thought it may be misleading to indicate that it is a proportionate consolidation. So do you have any comment on this point, and do you agree with the current wording for agenda decision E?
Comment? John?
I mean, I agree with not referring to consolidation procedures. However, I do think in the second last paragraph of the decision, you say that paragraph 20D would generally be applied to a joint operation when the joint arrangement is not structured through a separate vehicle, or it's structured through a separate vehicle. I don't think the application of paragraph 20D is driven by the type of joint arrangement. I think the application of paragraph 20D is if you're selling the output to yourself, then it's not a sale. So I don't agree with the characterization that the type of joint arrangement affects the application of paragraph 20D.
No, I think what we were trying to say there was those are the circumstances in which we could see that paragraph 20D might be applicable, but I agree with you, it doesn't therefore follow that it always does apply because of those structures.
Laurent?
I had exactly the same concern as John, and my drafting suggestion is to start with accordingly paragraph 20D of IFRS 11 would generally be applied to a joint operation when, you go at the end of the sentence that starts with, for example, and so it says when the joint operation sells its output to third parties. You just delete from the bullet to the other when, and so it just reads accordingly, paragraph 20D of IFRS 11 will generally be applied to a joint operation when the joint operation sells its output to third parties. That's it.
Okay. Andrew?
I agree with John and Laurence's comments. I wonder also, maybe this is belt and braces, but is it worth just saying explicitly that one joint operator doesn't recognise a shared revenue for sales by the operation to the other joint operator or operators? I think that's actually the real source of confusion. Not the sales by the operation to yourself, but the sales by the operation to the other operators.
Would selling to third parties not cover that?
The third parties would be parties other than the joint operators.
Yes.
So, like I say, maybe it's belt and braces, but I think it would possibly add some clarity.
Okay, Sandy.
I don't have anything to add.
Okay, Fei Long.
I agree with Leo in paragraph 23, and I believe that the joint operator should recall its purchase, and the joint operator should recall its sales. But as part of normal inter-entity elimination procedures, these sales would be eliminated against the share of output purchased by the joint operators. So I believe that these would be consistent with the elimination procedures applied to intercompany sales between parent and subsidiary.
I'm not clear what the implication of your view is. Do you support the...
I agree with the view in paragraph 23.
Okay. Any objections? All right. Press on, Wanhee.
Okay. Next one is agenda decision F. It is about accounting treatment when the joint operator's share of output purchased differs from its share of ownership interest in the joint operation. So we don't have any relevant point. And do you have any comment, and do you agree with the current wording for agenda decision F?
Agenda decision F, comments?
Reinhardt? I had one comment, and that is that this version of the agenda decision introduces the concept of an equalization mechanism. And my concern is that we didn't talk about an equalization mechanism, and certainly from our vantage point in Canada, we don't typically see such a mechanism. So I just am concerned that by putting it in, people may be looking for that and come to a conclusion that may not be appropriate if it is not present. So I think the concepts that we talked about are well captured elsewhere without the reference to that mechanism itself.
So you would suggest deleting what? Where in the, or would you just say delete the whole thing?
The whole paragraph.
Which paragraph?
That right at the bottom, page 19, that talks about
if it is national investment. So the Interpretations Committee also noted that if the joint operators made a substantial investment, that differs.
Correct.
Okay. So you delete that paragraph. Let's just go around. John, then Laurence.
I mean, I wouldn't delete the paragraph. I mean, the word equalization mechanism may be problematic, but I think all it's really doing is saying the committee is noting that there might be something else in the arrangement that should be accounted for. So,
Laurence?
Sam, I would disagree deleting because I think it explains or describes another situation that may exist and people need to think at and consider.
So I have to say, back in the day, which in my case is when dinosaurs still roamed the earth, these deals had equalization mechanisms in the states. So I'm surprised that you hadn't seen them in Canada, or they disappeared since the dinosaurs. Tony?
I was going to make the same point as John and Laurence. I could understand removing the reference to an equalization mechanism, but I think we need to get across the perspective that there may be many reasons why the share of output may not be consistent with the investment, and that it's important to understand why that happens to determine the accounting rather than, and it sort of looks as if it's focusing on a specific fact pattern. So the reference to an equalization, removing the reference to an equalization mechanism would be fine. But I think there's a principle there.
So you'd keep the paragraph, but just remove the...
Yeah. Okay.
Bonnie?
I would agree with Reinhardt that I think that paragraph can be deleted because I think the next paragraph, kind of the first full paragraph on the top of page 20, illustrates the concept. There could be many reasons why there's a difference, and understanding why that difference is there is therefore needed to really understand what the accounting should result. And if I remember correctly, that was really the substance of our conversation. And I think that's the concept that is the most important concept, not is there or is there not an equalization mechanism. It's there could be, but you need to understand why there could be a difference in the share of the output, and that's really the critical point from my perspective.
Well said. Sandy? Okay. Fei Long?
I also believe that such equalization mechanism do not exist in most cases.
Do not exist.
In most cases.
Exist in most cases. Okay. All right. Well, again, the first question is, do we drop the paragraph altogether? So how many would object to dropping the paragraph?
Seven.
Fei Long, would you object to dropping the paragraph?
No.
Okay. Sandy?
No.
Okay. So we keep the paragraph. Now the question is, do we drop the reference in the paragraph to equalization provisions? How many would drop the reference?
Two, three. Three would drop in the room.
In the room. Sandy?
I would leave it.
Okay. Fei Long?
I would like to drop.
You would like to drop. Okay. I think the majority is to keep it. Given those two conclusions, how many object, or are there any objections to publishing? Okay, we move on then.
So next one is agenda decision D, G. It is about accounting by the joint operator, and it's a separate financial statement. Do you have any comments, and do you agree with the current wording for agenda decision G?
So no specific issues raised by the staff on this one. Questions, comments? Any objections to publishing? Okay, we're on a roll. Juan He.
Last one is agenda decision H. It's about accounting by the joint operation. that is a separate vehicle in its financial statements. You don't have any points to this decision. So do you have any comments, and do you agree with the current wording?
Laurence?
I'm not sure that the examples add anything to this agenda decision. I think it's not complete. I think there are certain questions that may be raised, or it creates more concerns and confusion. So I would propose that we do not include those examples starting on page 22. For example, the IC considered the two following examples. You delete that, and you just go to on the basis of the analysis above, the interpretations committee determined that, and so on.
So you would delete subparagraphs A and B,
yeah,
completely. And the lead-in language.
Yeah, so I would just stop here. Yeah. At the interpretations committee noted that it would be important to reflect the effects of the joint operator's rights and obligation in the accounting for the joint operation's assets and liabilities. Full stop.
Tony?
I had the same thought. I found the second example particularly confusing. I wasn't sure what it was telling me, so I'd be in the same place. I think the principle is well enough explained in here without needing the examples.
Andrew?
I agree with Tony and Laurence.
Okay. Pei Long?
Yes, I agree. To make it more clear.
Sandy?
I don't have any comments.
Okay. The proposal is to drop the examples. How many support that? Eleven in the room. I think Fei Long has already said that he supports it. Sandy?
Yeah,
that's fine.
Okay. Objections to publishing? None? Juan He, congratulations. That is a heck of an effort. And we'll see you back in a few minutes anyway. So. Okay, we're moving to agenda paper 3.